How to get more out of DXing coming up in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the studios of the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, with this rain report. Take a look sometime on QRZ.com at the bios of world-class DX stations, and you may catch yourself drooling over the mega-position stations many of the top DXers have used to contact 300-plus countries. A notable exception is Don Whiteman, KK9H, of Northfield, Illinois. Don has 5-band DXCC plus endorsements for 30, 17, and 12 meters. If you look at his antenna farm, it's not an antenna farm. Don combines timing and a lot of experience to work the world, even on 160 meters, from the Chicago area. Rain's Hap Holly, KC9RP, chatted with Don, KK9H, in the Rain booth at the 2015 Dayton Hamvention, and learned some tips and tricks about DXing with Don.
You've been a ham since 1967, but you told me you didn't become a DX enthusiast until 2000. How come?
Well, I don't really have an answer for that. I think for all those years, I just basically tuned the bands and talked to people. If I heard them calling CQ or called CQ myself to see who would come back, I didn't really focus on the pursuit of collecting DXCC entities and countries. But, you know, over the years, I did participate in a lot of contests to work people and give them points. And if you do that enough for enough time, you will receive enough QSL cards from all over the place, and I did. So while I wasn't actively pursuing DXing over those years, I did get a lot of cards, and of course I sent out a lot of cards. And then I finally decided sometime around 2000, you know, it's time I probably should get this done and get the certificate and go on. And once I did, I really kind of focused on it from then.
What is the most difficult part of DXing for you?
Probably time. As a member of the NIDXA, one of the things that's really clear is that the people that are way up the scale on the DXing achievements are, for the most part, they're retired folks. So they've got plenty of time to be there when the band is open in a particular country that they really need happens to be on the air. In my case, I can't tell you the number of times that some country I really wish to get and have shows up, but I'm at work. I'm not retired, so I've missed one example, which was kind of funny, is I think in 2007, a group went to these little rocks that pop up out of the South China Sea, the BS-7H de-expedition to Scarborough Reef. And literally, they're just a couple of rocks that pop up out of the water, so they had to build platforms and operate from there. The one time that they were copyable, I guess, in the black hole of Nineland that we live in, I remember this vividly. It was on a Thursday morning at about 10 o'clock. I got a phone call from one of my friends. They're, oh, no, he's telling me. And I said, well, that doesn't do me any good. I'm 17 miles away from my station. So I did not get a chance to work them. And they were trying to work nines because it was one of our NIDXA guys, K9HA, that happened to be on. So I missed out on that because I was still gainfully employed.
Now that you have 330 countries and are looking for the elusive 10 that you still need, what electronic resources do you use to help you toward that end?
Well, maybe a little description of my station is in order. My antennas, which are, of course, a key component to success in any ham radio endeavor, are simple and perhaps even modest, but I use an inverted L that's made out of a 130-foot length of wire that goes up about 55 feet, then across the yard to a tree that's tied off at about 60 feet up, and then a short lead coming into an antenna tuner I use on it. So that's what I use on 160, 80, and sometimes on 40. For the other bands, I use a high-gain Patriot AV640 vertical those antennas are nice. They're not exactly some of the types of antennas you see that some of the big DXers have in their disposal, but they work for me. And so I'd say probably since I have that, the type of antenna, I'd say the most important thing is, of course, a little more power. I do run a kilowatt on all bands. That certainly is an important helper. But I'd also like to think that some of the success I have in getting through on some of the stations I've successfully worked is partly because of skill. And the other thing that I would say is a lot of DX is really on CW. The vast majority of the stations are CW, and you really need to operate CW if you really want to get some of the more difficult ones. And, you know, you really ought to have your extra class license so you can use that bottom 25 kilohertz on those bands, because that's very often where the DX stations you need hang out. I would say CW skills and being able to operate in lower 25 kilohertz, and of course having a little help from a little power when needed. Those are some of the things I think I would say that are tools that I use and employ.
What about the tools you use electronically to find out who's where?
Well, with the advent of the DX spotting networks that people can connect up to with their computers, and as I said earlier, time is a very critical component for me with other things that I do besides ham radio, but they help a lot in finding stations that you need, because the logging software I use allows you to put up a screen where the DX clusters are displayed, and the logging program knows which countries I've already got, which ones I need, and also which modes I need them in. They're all color-coded. So in my case, if an all-time new one were to show up, such as, say, Scarborough Reef, or perhaps North Korea someday, it'll show up as red. And, of course, that stands out on the screen, and a little chime goes off on the computer. So it says, okay, dummy, better wake up. Here's one you need. And I've got the station set up so that if I take my mouse and double-click that line on that screen where that station is, my equipment immediately jumps to that frequency and is ready to go to give him a call.
What are you using for the transceiver?
My transceiver is an ICOM IC7800.
Now, I know you like the K3 a lot. By Elecraft, you don't use a K3 at home?
Well, I do own a K3, but I bought it 4 or 5 years ago as a second rig and as a rig to take on vacation. So I use it primarily for vacations. I use it for field day with our club when we give ham radio demonstrations with HF. I use it for that with temporary antennas. My K3 is not filled up with all of the things you can put in it because I don't need them. But for a really nice portable 100-watt rig, I mean, it's perfect, needless to say, for that.
You're listening to a conversation about DXing with Don Whiteman, KK9H, from the RAIN booth at the Dayton Hamvention 2015. We'll resume Hap Poly KC9RP discussion with Don in a moment, after I remind you these RAIN reports are accessible anytime on therainreport.com, on Twitter at therainreport, and via iTunes.
You're listening to The RAIN Report from www.therainreport.com.
Don, it's really refreshing to hear of someone who has done so well DXing without having stacked fives or rhombic or some exotic antennas. It's just you and me now. What are some of the secrets of how you manage to work around the pileups with such a modest antenna setup?
One of the things I hadn't touched upon, because you were asking about how you find some of the stations, one shouldn't rely exclusively on just the DX cluster spotting system. Because literally, by the time that somebody has spotted a station on the system, he's already worked them. Now everybody knows where that station is. So the ideal scenario is to spend time, and again, we're back to that four-letter word, time, but to spend time tuning around. And if you're fortunate enough to find a DX station where he's just started calling CQ, or maybe he's just finished his contact with his first or second person. If you're fortunate enough to run across a station like that at that time, you can get through and work them before everybody else necessarily finds out that he's there. And that really is the optimal way to find the more difficult stations. Part of it is being there at the right place at the right time. You know, right place being the right frequency, and the right time being when the band happens to be open from where you live to where they are. So there's maybe a little bit of luck involved. But if you can find stations that way, anybody with a dipole and 100 watts can work even the rarest of DX stations, or some of the more difficult ones to get.
Well, let's assume you don't find that station before. The rest of the world does. Let's say the station is on 10 meters, on 28450.
Okay.
And he's working up. Rather than listening on the frequency he's transmitting, which I think the smart international DXers do.
Yes, they do.
So we can actually hear him and not everyone calling him.
Right.
Let's assume he's listening 20 kilohertz up. What tip can you pass along to help get through that mess?
Absolutely. Well, that's called operating split. That's the terminology. And for everybody that wants to work a DX station operating that way, I would request, please, please make sure that your transmitter is actually set to operate on the frequency where he says he's listening, not on top of him. People sometimes forget to push their split button. We all do it. Part of it is, if you can tune around the range of frequencies he says he's listening. So if we have a station at 28450, and if he says he's listening up, let's say 5 to 15, well, of course, that means he's listening from 28455 up to 28465. Part of what you try to do is, when he's through transmitting, is to listen into the pileup, as it were. And if you can, try to find the guy that he comes back to and he's just working. So, for example, if he calls W9ABC59, try to go and see if you can find W9ABC, who probably will be kind of excited and say, oh, thank you, you're 5927. You know, if you can find a guy saying something like that in that 10 kilohertz spread of stations calling him, when he's looking for the next station to call him, if you can put out a call on top of where that guy was, you've now increased your chance of that DX station working you. One of the other tricks is, sometimes they move up or down a little bit as they work different people. So if you can figure out that he's moving up each time, or if he's moving down each time, you can sort of lead him a little bit, call him a little bit above or below if that's the direction he's heading. Hap and I were actually employing the technique that I literally just described. Hap wanted to work Navassa, so I talked to Hap. I think it was on our 220 repeater, so we weren't bothering anybody else. And I was doing the tuning around the stations calling Navassa, looking for the guy that had just worked him. And that way I could tell Hap, he's at such and such a frequency. And it worked. I found him, and I said, Hap, tune here and call now. And you did, and they came back to you, and so we got it done. But that was using the technique I just described.
It does help to have two receivers.
Well, yeah, and I was going to mention that too. Not every rig has two receivers. Some have twin VFOs. And so what you kind of have to do, if that's the kind of radio you have, is you're going to have to kind of push that button and go back and forth and back and forth between the DX station's frequency and the other VFO where your transmitter is, and listen there. And having the second receiver saves you from having to go back and forth all the time. That's really the advantage of it. You can listen to both frequencies at once, so you know when he's talking and listening. That's key. You got to know what his cycle is, when he's allowing the next guy to call him, etc. But also, if you can hear that and also tune through the stations calling him to find the last one he worked, that's a tremendous help.
If you're using two receivers, though, that means you really need to have a separate antenna.
No, you don't. The rigs that have two receivers in them use the same antenna that they're on. If you have a radio that has two receivers in it, such as the K3s can and the 7800 does, when you transmit, it automatically mutes both receivers, so it protects itself. But you don't need two antennas. Just the same antenna works for both.
And that concludes our first segment of a chat about DXing with Hap Holly, KC9RP, and Don Whiteman, KK9H, holder of 5-band DXCC with endorsements on 30, 17, and 12 meters. We'll hear more of what Don Whiteman, KK9H, has to say about DXing from Chicago's North Shore next time. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2016 Rain. All rights are reserved. Now for Rain's chief pot and bottle washer, Hap Holly, KC9RP. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 from all of us affiliated with the Radio Amateur Information Network. www.therainreport.com. On Twitter @TheRainReport and via iTunes.